Just take a minute and picture it.
Like, really put yourself there. You're in a foreign country. You only have, like, 6 friends.
They can't.
They walk in.
You only have, like, 6 friends. More than you and I have combined mm-hmm. right now.
And then the MTC's president's wife comes in with, like, literally a clipboard to, like, check your living space. And this is just, like, above her head.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no.
It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. It's more than a podcast. They're more than ex-Mormons.
Everybody, welcome back to More Than Mormon. My name is Lena.
And I'm Meg.
Welcome to part two.
Welcome to part two.
We're glad you're here.
We are gonna, if you missed the end of our last episode, we started talking about the bite model and sort of evaluating just how culty the Mormon church is. I think when I was first, even when I knew the church like wasn't true, it was hard for me to use the word cult. Especially because I knew so many people. I still know a lot, like a lot of people in the church. It was hard for me to be like, yeah, all my friends are in a cult. But yeah. It certainly is one of those things where, like, the longer I've been out, the more comfortable I am with just, like, calling it what it is. Which is a cult.
It's a cult. Yeah. Yep. So if you did not listen to the episode that came out last week, you probably didn't get a whole lot of explanation as to what the bite model is. So just really quickly, the bite model is a way to identify whether or not an organization is a cult. And it's separated into 4 different categories. B, behavior. I, information. T, thought. And E, emotional. And by controlling behavior, information, thought, and emotion, those are cult-like behaviors. Mm-hmm. And we went out of order just because of how the conversation was going. And we started with thought control. And we discussed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different markers of which we both agreed the church fits. Mm-hmm. So
so
that's where we left off.
Today I think we're just gonna go through the B, the I, and the E, and sort of discuss. I mean, Lena's just gonna read the category and we're just gonna sort of share our opinion about it. We're not by any means like church historians and we don't speak for the church, mm-hmm. but just like from our experience as members, and I think especially as like endowed members and as missionaries, like you and I were both like very involved in the church and very converted
absolutely
to the church. So yeah, we're just gonna go through them and talk about how we feel. As
all
usual.
All the culty cult stuff.
All the culty stuff. Did you ever, when you were in the church, hear people say, like, well, if you look up the word cult, it just means, like, a dedicated group of people. So really, like, every church is a cult. Did you hear that?
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, 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 no. No. That's, no.
If that's all it is.
Just not true.
Then why can't we call it a cult?
Right? Why are you so offended if we call it a cult then? Yeah, definitely a cult. And I remember it kind of being a little bit of a sting as a member and when I shortly left, because it is really difficult to wrap your head around the fact that you were in a cult. You know, and we mentioned like Scientology, you know, and there's like the Jonestown group, the Manson family. There's a long, terrifying history of cults, and I think it it immediately like terrifies people when they hear it, especially when they're in the church, because no one wants to think that they're being brainwashed and that they're in a cult.
Yeah, and
surprise, no one wants that.
Yeah, and I think for me, I know I've shared this before, but sort of the process of realizing that like I was not just like a member of the Mormon church, but I was really ultimately like a victim of things the church teaches and does and asks of its members, that process was really hard for me to sort of come to terms with. And it really, like, I really had to go through a full like grieving process, you know, with the anger and the denial and those kinds of things, because it was really hard to like admit to myself even that like I was in a cult. And not only like was I in a cult, but I was like in a cult,
like in it, like believed it, mm-hmm. paid to go on a mission and helped other people join it.
Yes.
In a cult. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Bite model does a really good job of breaking it apart. So it's not just me or you saying, well, it's a cult because of this and this, but it's like, well, let's actually like break it down and like, let's actually like think about ways that it really did control our behavior and control our emotions and essentially control like our lives for the amount of time that we were active and believing Mormons.
Exactly. So B, like we said, stands for behavior. And I feel like this could go in so many directions. I mean, you need to dress a certain way. You're not allowed to eat a certain way, drink a certain way, look a certain way, certain things, talk a certain way. Yeah, absolutely. Like, no rated R movies, no coffee, no alcohol, no sex before marriage, no masturbation. You can't be gay. You can't be transgender. You can't show your knees.
And everything is
or your shoulders. Those, you have to keep them very hidden. Mm-hmm. No cleavage.
And those, and it's so specific. Like, I think about like For very the Strength specific. Of Youth, which is, it's like a booklet. It's basically just a list of things that you can and mm-hmm. can't do. And it's called For the Strength of Youth. Like, the fact that that's its name, even that implies like, if you do these things and don't do the things we tell you not to, like, that you will be given strength. And that's really how the church gets you to do anything as a member, is it promises you these like, quote, blessings, you know. And even when you go in the temple, it's like marrow in your bones. And I don't remember all of the shit that it promises you, but it's like, you're supposed to memorize it, but I never did because I'm not great at memorizing.
Hold on. I have it.
Remember pieces of it.
Health in the navel, marrow in the mm-hmm. bones, strength in the loins and in the sinews. Power of the priesthood be upon me and upon my posterity through all generations of time and throughout all eternity.
Wow. Look at you. So I think you could sneak into the Celestial Kingdom.
I could absolutely do it.
I didn't go very often because I didn't like going to the temple. It gave me a lot of anxiety. And the way that my anxiety represents is usually in migraines and also in like having to go to the bathroom. So I was like, the worst place to get a migraine and to have to go to the bathroom is the temple.
Again, go visit our temple episode. It should pop up in the tag in the corner here, mm-hmm. because y'all, you don't want to miss I'm just gonna leave it there.
You don't want to
shit your pants in the temple, you guys. You just don't want to.
But yeah, I didn't. You
from experience.
I didn't go very often, and I always felt very judged at the veil when I like would pause or hesitate. And for the most part, this is how I passed like every class I've ever taken, is like I memorize it and then I do the test and then I forget it immediately, which isn't how you should get.
Baby.
It's not how you should get an education you care about, but it works really effectively if you just need to pass a class, which is how I felt every time I went to temple, is they would say it And then I would like remember it just long enough for me to like go through the veil, which is helps if you're sitting in the front because you get to go first. And I'd go through the veil and I'd remember it, and maybe I'd hesitate and maybe the little temple lady would have to help me. And I always felt judged for not remembering it. And then I'd go into the celestial room and I'd just like immediately forget it. So I could not sneak into the celestial kingdom. Although I do remember the handshakes.
I got you, girl. I got you.
You can be my helper at the veil. Do you get one of those at the actual veil?
I bet you they do, because they say that the temple is exactly like heaven on earth. So
I guess so.
I'm just going to assume. Fucking Mormons. Okay.
Moving on.
Sorry. Mormon church. Mormon church. Not the people. Not the people. Unless you're Richard. That guy can suck a big fat one. Anyway,
who was Richard?
The guy who wouldn't stop on our fucking Book of Abraham video.
Oh, somebody else named Richard followed us on Instagram. And I was like, is that the fucking guy? Like, did he
find us? Oh my God, I know. I was like,
it's a different person.
Oh my God.
It's a different Richard.
It is. I had the exact, we are on the same. Yeah, because I was like, oh fuck, this is not going to end, is it? I tried to end it.
Someone else came to our rescue.
And he's going to come back.
I think.
A handful of people did, actually. People were like, who the fuck is this guy?
When I saw the notification that someone named Richard followed us on Instagram, I literally in my head was already crafting like the most polite DM I could send him. That would be like, listen, this content is not for you. You are welcome to follow us. But like, if you're seeking this out to start things, like, please just leave us alone. Like, we don't come to you. You came to us. Like, I was already in my head being like, how can we, like, as politely as possible, be like, please just leave us alone.
I honestly thought that, like telling him over and over that, like, he's literally doing nothing but, like, helping our channel by, like, staying. And because what he may or may not realize is, like, every time you're commenting, it clicks into the video. So not only do we get a view, but your commenting and us commenting back and forth is going to show YouTube that our content is important. I said that. He's like, your content is important. No one thinks it's important. I'm like, oh my God.
You know, but I think
that's not what I'm saying.
It's hard to argue with people who are like a little off their rocker. And I think what happens is people who are like well-meaning, well-intentioned Mormons are like, I'm going to stand up for like what I believe. Nothing wrong with that. You and I have done that. But like, then they like go a little too far to the point where they're like commenting on a like a ex-Mormon video like over and over and over again.
He spent 2.5 days
mm-hmm. replying,
commenting. And I'm like, bro, you are wasting your time.
Well,
man.
And that, I think that connects to this like behavior control that like in his mind,
oh my God,
it's a
yes.
good use of his time to be defending mm-hmm. the church against these two girls yep. who are just, we both have jobs. Like, we both have lives. Like, we're not like full-time YouTube comment responders. Like,
we're not even getting monetized. No. Okay. So like, if you're watching this right now, and you aren't interested in our content, maybe you think we're kind of annoying, or maybe you're like out to get us, you want to do some sort of hate commenting. We literally are not making any money off of this. We put our money into it to like do the giveaway, to get the recording equipment and stuff like that. Like, we make no money mm-hmm. at all. And like, when people go
money.
And like give us a review, yeah, we're losing money. Like, people go and give us a review on Apple Podcasts, love it, keep doing it. But again, just because we have reviews, we're not monetizing off of it. All that does is help the algorithm like pick up and hopefully help people who are interested in the content find it. It has nothing to do with money, and it has nothing to do with like trying to attack the church or people who believe in the church,
right?
Which is so funny, because they're like, you left the church, why can't you leave it alone? And I'm like, why can't you leave me alone? I am out here working through my trauma, trying to be funny, being a little sassy, mm-hmm. and you're over here talking about some sort of mythology bullshit. And I'm like,
can you imagine if you like, let's, for example, like, I love the Green Bay Packers. If I like moved to a different state and the people there were like, you left Wisconsin, like, why can't you leave the fucking Green Bay Packers alone and like start rooting for the Seahawks or whatever?
Why are you like, it's like, a Packer fan when you live in it's like
why can't I just, I'm just doing my thing out here alone, like I'm not like it's just one of those things where like
which honestly that is one of the things that perpetuates this us versus them mentality, right? Of like when people leave, like they continue to attack it, you know, and that, you know, and that continues to make people who leave look bad or whatever. But what's actually happening is people are trying to like work through their trauma. They're trying to rebuild their community. They're trying to find their footing again. Mm-hmm. And
for you and
I, and it does further separate people who are in and who are out.
Yes. Well, and for you and I think for a lot of people, like part of this like healing process is involves like humor and making fun of the church, and it's different than making fun of like members of the church, like specific members. Mm-hmm. Like when we make fun of like the church and the church's members, I don't have like specific people in mind. Like I'm just like, isn't it funny? And if mm-hmm. I do, it's like me when I was a Mormon. Like I'm like, isn't yeah. it ridiculous that like you and I did these things?
Well, and like we said, the very first episode flat out, like I will judge the authorities of the church. I will judge the founders of the church. I will judge the institution as a whole. But like, we're not here to attack any one individual or a group of individuals within the church. We're not even close. We don't even bring up names on this podcast mm-hmm. out of respect, whether or not they're listening. And like, I know I've brought up people who do listen and maybe wouldn't have cared if I used their name, but like, we aren't here to ruin any friendships and relationships we have now or burn any more bridges that don't need to be burned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think what a lot of people are looking for when they leave the church is like a sense of community, because one of the big things that the church like did provide for me that was really positive like was a sense of community and like mm-hmm. like-minded people and friendships. And I think when you leave, you lose a lot of those friendships, even if on the surface those people are still like, you're still friends with them, you're still friendly with them, there's a
the relationship depth, is not the same.
Yeah, there's a depth of friendship that gets lost because you know that like it's like in Friends where it's like they don't know that we know that they know that you know, it's like
exactly.
you know that they're thinking this and this about you, and they know that you're because thinking you've been that there. They're thinking those things. Like it's just, it's one of those things where there's
an elephant in the mm-hmm, room.
Exactly. There's no good way to go about talking about things where no one's going to get offended, but at the same time leaving it alone is not the answer, because like you and I have a right to discuss our experiences, and if we want to share it on a public platform, like we have a right to do that, and Richard has a right to comment on it, because like if we didn't want his comments, absolutely. We could disable comments, but like we don't care.
Not here
you
to
know
do that.
Like
we're not going to be the Mormon church and take away transparency because something, like, you can try to bully us and make us stop. You can call us names or whatever. You can judge us or whatever. But that doesn't mean we're going to remove transparency. Everyone can go and read those comments if they want to. And they can see our responses.
And honestly, Richard or whoever finds this video and leaves comments, negative comments, you and I have both been hurt so deeply by people we are close to in the Mormon church that like random members of the church leaving comments like really doesn't affect
random
me
strangers
as deeply
no.
as I was wounded by like members of the church that I was like very close to and loved deeply.
And that's the thing too, is like, you know, leaving it alone, like you said, it's not the answer, because not only did it cause us a lot of harm, a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, like that guy Trauma Queens would be a good name for your podcast, because apparently having trauma and trying to like work through that is a negative thing.
Honestly,
for whatever reason,
Trauma Queens is
I
kind
am okay
of iconic
with Trauma Queens.
Maybe we'll have a spinoff or like a segment
because
called the
you
Trauma
know
Queens.
What let's you know, the church doesn't do a fantastic job about talking about mental health and things
no.
like that.
Yeah.
And so to talk about your trauma in the church is kind of like a you know, somebody might say something fast in testimony meeting, but they're always trying to like wrap it up of how they, it was either at their fault or they just need to be patient. And then God finally comes in. And when you are on the other side of it, it's all up to you. Mm-hmm. It's all up to you to kind of figure it out and heal. And so, you know, that's why we're here. That's why we're doing this podcast. And we have built ourselves a little community. Is it huge? No. Are we making money? No. Does it matter? No. Mm-hmm. If you want to get under our skin, it's just, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like you said, we have been hurt by so many relationships that actually meant something to us, you know, relationships that impacted our life. And we've had to go through that process of what it's like to like lose it and learn to let it go. And when a stranger comes on, like, ironically, same video, some guy was saying like, obviously my objective is working because you don't have any likes and you hardly have any views and nobody's paying attention. Now we have like, you know, mm-hmm. then it blew up, but it's like someone else was literally trying to like bully us into like not doing the podcast. And I'm just like,
right.
Do you really think has that worked on any ex-Mormon content before? No. Ex-Mormons have thicker skin than you wouldn't fucking believe. Mm-hmm.
You have to, especially if your family is Mormon, if your spouse is Mormon, you know.
Or if you're still like a student at a church school mm-hmm. on a mission, heaven for fucking bid.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's so much harder to leave than I think active Mormons realize. Or if you've never left the Mormon church, I mean, you really don't know what
you're
it's
not
like.
Gonna know.
And so I think it is really easy. I did this all the time when I was active, you know. I'd click on something thinking it was Mormon centric and then realize it was, you know, quote, anti-Mormon, and
which
immediately like
just a side note, don't be upset that we have Mormon in our video titles. It is the name of our podcast, you guys. And if you are an active member, you already know that Mormon is like a term of endearment for Satan. So why are you clicking on it anyway? Mm-hmm. Naughty, naughty. Continue.
Yeah. You guys don't even like the word Mormon anymore.
So yeah, like- why are you clicking on it anyway? Like, and you wonder like, how you're finding our podcast, because you're looking up anti-Mormon mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't remember what I was saying, but.
Oh, shit. I'm no, sorry. Okay. That's my fault.
I'm sure it'll come back to me and then I'll randomly blurt it out.
Anyway. Behavior.
The point is the Mormon church is shitty. And
it's shitty, and sometimes it forces people to do really shitty things.
It teaches its
and they feel justified in doing so.
It teaches its members to do shitty things and to do it like in the name of Jesus Christ. Like,
yep.
It's so extreme.
Trying to defend from anti-Mormon lies. Okay, well, maybe you should talk to your church leaders about that one then.
Oh.
Because they're the ones who have created all these anti-Mormon lies.
What I was going to say, I remembered, is, you know, I could click on something or walk into a conversation and, like, immediately, like, recognize it as, like, anti-Mormon. And then immediately, like, my attitude about it would just, like, shift. And where even if I was still willing to, like, consume it, I was like distanced away from it, and I was consuming it through the lens of like, this is not true because it is anti-Mormon. So mm-hmm. I totally get someone clicking on our video and being like, cool, a Mormon podcast, I'm a Mormon, I love podcasts, and then 2 seconds in being like, oh, it's like anti-Mormon, and then watching it, you know, through that lens of like, this is not true. But I think like you and I at the end of the day know that like we do our best to share things that are true. We do our research, we like share our sources, and we, like you said, we want to be transparent. Like if we share something and you have actual evidence that what we said was not true, like feel free to share it
by reputable sources, not just some dweebs on another YouTube yes. channel calling Egyptologists
yes
arrogant.
Yeah, don't, if you...
or, you know, that's not actually evidence, and neither is your faith.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, yes,
so
exactly.
If you want to actually, like, show us where we are actually being misleading, we are open to it.
Yeah. Yeah, citing another YouTube video is not going to get you the points you need to pass the class, sir.
No. And I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, we cite videos that we drop links or whatever. You know, like we can drop a link to Stephen Hassan, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. He is the man who is like a cult expert, and he is the one who kind of like, I don't know if he like came up with it or something. Anyway, he's the man if you're going to learn about cult stuff. And so like I'm going to drop a couple links when the video uploads, but that like referring someone to that video is totally different because Stephen has the reputation of actually knowing what he's talking about. A couple people on YouTube, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to say go to More Than Mormon podcast for scientific evidence, like don't do that. You know. And so like pointing us to a couple of idiots who are like, the Egyptologists were debunked because they were talking about mythology, and if you really think that Joseph Smith was going to have a direct translation of mythology, you're stupid and ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like,
okay,
but
get out of here.
What the Egyptologists were saying was like, it was not what Joseph Smith said it was. Like,
regardless of it being mythology or not, Joseph claimed to have directly translated it.
And he didn't.
And he did not. And the church admits that. And Egyptologists admit that. And Robert Rittner, who sadly just passed away, was an active Egyptologist Mormon who admitted that. So,
cite your sources. Just cite your sources.
Show us your receipts, you know? And if there's ever a time where we say we're going to give you a receipt and we don't, chances are we just forgot, let us know. Shoot us an email or a DM and we will gladly pass along whatever information you need to help you think critically about the church. And that's whether you want to try and debunk us or not, ultimately the power rests in your hands. But the church likes to keep you from feeling like you actually have that power, you know?
And I feel pretty confident in saying that, like, you and I will never join the Mormon church again. So if your goal is ultimately
you
to, like,
literally
reconvert
could
us,
offer me all the money in the world and I would say no.
You can buy anything in the world with money. That's what Satan says.
You know what I buy with money?
Porn shoulders.
Porn shoulders.
The candle. Anyway.
It's a little too cold for that, and my hair is a little too crazy. I'll be a model next week.
Next.
Until then. Anyway, speaking of being a model, a part of behavior control is dress and grooming, which we obviously know, not only with the garments, but look at BYU dress code standards.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
fashion police, garment checks.
You have to, if you're a man, you have to be shaved. Elder Holland says Jesus doesn't have a beard, so.
Supposedly.
No beards.
No beards. No knees, no shoulders. Ear piercings, but only one in each lobe if you have a vagina. If you have a penis, you may not get ear piercings at all.
I think there's also a standard in terms of like how nice you dress for sacrament meeting, and I'm sure it's different in different cultures, but in Western American culture, in the church, I think it's pretty, I don't know, wearing like, I've heard
everyone has the white shirt.
Yeah, I've heard the stories of like, you can't wear denim skirts, you know, it has to be, can't be denim, or you can't wear a t-shirt and a skirt, and you know, like, which is ridiculous because, first of all, who gives a
shit? Who cares? Like,
But also, it's just...
First of all, not everyone can afford it. Not everyone is comfortable in something fancier. And if God is really that picky about what people are wearing, mm-hmm. then perhaps the church should not have chosen a picture of Jesus Christ showing his shoulders, bearing his nipple, with long hair and a beard, wearing open-toed shoes.
As their new church logo. Bring back that Moroni. Looks
very Catholic, by the way. I know.
We can't use the word Mormon, and now we can't use Moroni. I mean, what's the point of having a Book of Mormon if we can't use the fake names that Joseph Smith stole when he wrote it?
Like, come on.
But yeah, I was just gonna say it really exposes like what the church's priorities are, that they care about like the niceness of how you're dressed and, especially on Sundays, but just also in general, I think there's this, you know, they want their church members to look nice and to represent the church as best as possible 24/7. And that, which goes, you know, perfectly falls into the behavior control that even when you're not at church, even when you're not doing church things, that you still need to be this example in everything you do and say.
Yep. So on here, which I think we maybe touched on a little bit, regulate what and how much you eat and drink. Word of wisdom. Hello.
Which, can we briefly for a moment talk about how weird it is that the word of wisdom says to eat meat sparingly, and we just ignore
and
that part?
The Mormons do not do that at all. And that is literally one of the best things we could do for this planet.
Yeah.
You don't even have to stop eating meat. Eat it sparingly.
Right. And Mormons, it's never even mentioned.
Nope. And there's all this debate about tea and coffee and hot chocolate and why something's allowed and why something isn't. Yeah. And a lot of people believe it was caffeine, and you can't even, maybe now you can, but for a while you couldn't get caffeine on any of the church campuses.
When I was at BYU, which kind of perpetuated
the idea. Yep. I couldn't either. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, perpetuated the idea that it was about caffeine, but like, that's not written anywhere. Yeah. Some people thought it was like, couldn't have chocolate.
Mm-hmm. There's all this.
But it's also unclear and also vague. Right.
And people are like, well, hot drinks means tea, but you can't have green tea or black tea, but you can have herbal tea. But to an extent, all tea is herbal. So like, it's just one of those things where it's so nitpicky about certain parts, but then at the same time it just completely fucking ignores the meat part, and I just want to know why.
Yep. I want to know why too. We're told that you can't pick and choose what parts of the religion you live and what parts you don't, so why is eat meat sparingly just dismissed?
And I would teach that on my mission and just like gloss
and something
right
like
over
coffee
it.
Can keep you out of the temple, but not like overeating or having like a Diet Coke addiction. That doesn't count.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't make any fucking sense. But it's about obedience. They want you, you know, it doesn't have to have an answer. The answer is God wants you to do this because he said so. And if you do this, you'll be blessed. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. Yep. Obedience is the first law of heaven. Which, on behavior control, guess what we see? Promote dependence and obedience. How does the church make you depend on them? By controlling you sexually, by controlling you financially, by making you, like, it's ridiculous.
Obedience brings blessings, but exact obedience brings miracles. Mm-hmm. And I had someone visit my mission, like a general authority, that was like, rather than exact obedience, oh shit, what was it? They told it, they're like, you can never be exactly obedient. So like, don't even fucking try. But I think it was like consecrated obedience, like this, that you're like striving to be.
The dedication to always be obedient. And when you're not obedient, to be remorsefully repentant.
Have that godly sorrow.
Yep, that godly sorrow. So there is something on here that I want to talk about because I personally feel like this is one of the big hitters for me, and I'm curious how you feel about it. Deprive you of 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And I thought about my mission.
Oh, yeah. I have never been more physically unwell in my life than I was on my mission. And I think a big part of that was because I wasn't getting enough sleep, and I was so stressed that even though, like, even when I was sleeping, it wasn't like restful sleep because I was so stressed out. Let me think of like the time. So you get home, you're supposed to be home by 9 and in bed by 10:30.
And lights out by 10:30.
And then you
and
get
then
up.
Alarm is at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Isn't that exactly 8 hours?
It's exactly 8 hours. And that.
Which I'm sorry, but giving you, because like you can get, you know, 9 or 9:30, you know, if something, you know, happens or whatever, but like you don't just like get to go home and go to bed. It's like you have to plan for the next day. You need to say prayers, you need to do your numbers, maybe you need to shower, maybe you're hungry, but also you just need to fucking decompress. Yeah.
And that was the thing that like I was missing from most of my mission, was that downtime. Even now, mm-hmm. like I go to work and when I come home, I literally just like lay in my bed and like, or like sit in my living room and just like scroll mindlessly on social media for like half an hour, because my brain has been so active for 10 hours at work that like I just need to like not think about anything for like,
yep.
Need to not say anything. I like sometimes I don't even like text people back. Like I don't have the mental energy to do it. And when you're a missionary, like you said, on my mission, we planned in the morning because they changed it. But still, you get home 9:30, and then it's like you grab something to eat. You need to like shower. You need to get ready for bed. You're supposed to journal every day. Sometimes mm-hmm. you have like a little companion inventory if you have like something you need to talk about. And then you pray. And I had companions, God bless them, that would be on their knees praying for like 20 minutes to 40 minutes to like an hour sometimes. And so like 10:30, and then you have to get in bed and fall asleep, which when you're stressed is not always easy to do. So by the time you're in bed falling asleep, let's say you get 7.5 hours if you're lucky.
If you're like really good night
sleep. The next morning you get up at 6:30 and the first thing you do is 30 minutes of exercise. Like, so you literally wake up and the first thing, well, you pray and then you exercise. And
then you hit the ground running and you don't stop until you come back home at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. And you don't have any alone time even during the day. Like, I loved when we got to go visit people who lived a little further out and we would have, like, sort of a longer drive out there, because it just, like, gave me time to, like, just, like, think in my head. You know what I mean? Like, just, like, be in my head and, like, yeah, my companion was in the car. But you just, you know, if you have some music on and you're not talking, like, that was the most privacy that I got, was just having some time to, like, not have to think out loud.
Yep. And the thing about being sleep deprived is that will inhibit your ability to think critically, to make decisions, and it makes it easier for them to indoctrinate, control, for lack of a better word, hypnotize, mm-hmm. brainwash, mm-hmm. you know? And I just think about Helen Mar Kimball talking about, you know, the 2 nights that she spent tossing and turning and not sleeping, trying to decide whether or not she was going to marry Joseph Smith. And I can guarantee that she was absolutely delirious. And when she felt like she got her spiritual confirmation, then that she was probably hallucinating. Like, mm-hmm. and I know people, like, if you're listening to this and you've like never had insomnia, you never served a mission or whatever, maybe you're like, does this even really matter? I attend births. I'm a student midwife. I do it for a living. I've been up for almost 48 hours straight and then had to go to work. And I literally, when I finally like got a little bit of sleep and woke up, I felt like I had the worst flu of my life. My entire body, not only was it like physically sore, but like my throat hurt, my lymph nodes were swollen, I had a fever, and the result was absolute exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, I learned my lesson. You know, birth workers usually don't do that, but I was really stubborn and I wanted to stay. But like, you know, and I also didn't want to cancel my clients the next day, but that's neither here nor there. I can tell you from doing, you know, sometimes 24 to 36 hour stints at a birth that it is absolutely crucial to get sleep. They say parents with newborns, if you can secure about 4 solid hours, like that's enough to like function enough to like change diapers, hold a baby, feed them.
Yeah.
Maybe shower, but that's mm-hmm. it. That's not actually enough to like cognitively go through your day.
Right.
And when you're a missionary, because everything is the same every single day and there's no break to that schedule, it's not like when you're home and, you know, like I said, you know, sometimes I go 24 to 36 hours, but then I can come home and I can decompress for an hour, hour and a half. I can sleep 8-9 hours if I need to. I can wake up, I can take my time, and then I can go about my day. Mm-hmm. As a missionary, you don't get the
chance
to do
that. There's never a chance to catch up.
Yeah. Nope. And
you're so...
A lot of companions... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, you're so, like... Not only do you have a schedule, but you have your companion to, like, keep you accountable to that schedule. So there's not an opportunity for you to, like... even permit yourself like extra time to sleep or rest or do anything. But also you, even if you do, like you feel guilty.
You have to deal with the guilt and mm-hmm. shame for doing yeah. it, which is ironic because your body is literally telling you what it needs. Like the other day I have horrible insomnia. I wasn't sleeping well. I ended up falling asleep at like 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30. Got up to go to work at 11 o'clock in the morning. And then when I came back home, it was like 5:30 in the evening. And I was like, I have to do homework. I can't take a nap. I couldn't do my homework. I like pulled my laptop out and I was like, it's useless. Like I need to sleep. And I tried to set an alarm and I just kept snoozing it because my body was like, nope, you need to keep sleeping. You need to keep mm-hmm. sleeping. And you don't have that opportunity as a missionary. And I, as well as all of my companions, always felt guilty when they were sick. And yeah. so we always felt the need to push ourselves even further in that moment, mm-hmm. you know, expecting that, you know, this is what obedience means. Unless I'm like dead on the floor, that's not, you know, there is no excuse.
Yeah.
I need to always be going. Yeah. And I feel like that has not helped my obsessive compulsive tendencies. It hasn't helped my ADHD. In fact, it's extremely hard for me now to like find the time for myself and like be consistent with it. And I feel like I've picked those things up in other parts of my life, but it was really solidified like into my psyche as a missionary that I always need to go.
Yeah.
And I can always be doing
yeah,
more.
I was sick a lot on my mission, and I also had a lot of anxiety on my mission. I think we've talked about my random phobias that I like developed as a missionary that I had never had before in my life. And there were definitely days on my mission where I was like, would wake up or, you know, at some point and I would be like, I don't feel good. I need to lay down, you know, like, I can't go out. We can't go out right now because I'm sick or whatever. And for months after my mission ended, so like it would be like over a year after like these specific instances had happened, like I would still in sacrament meeting or in like when I was praying, like I would still like get this like overwhelming sense of guilt and like feel the need to repent again for taking a couple of hours over a year ago while I was already a missionary 24/7 to like help my body recover physically and mentally. And I would like, I probably repented for doing that dozens of times before I ultimately like left the church. I think if I was still a member, like I think that every once in a while, like that guilt would still come back up because it was so, it was, I was taught, like you were saying that you feel this like need to keep pushing even when you're sick. Like I was explicitly taught to keep pushing when I was sick. Like it wasn't just an expectation that I had or that my trainer had or that other people had. Like I remember going to zone conferences and hearing my mission president or zone leaders or whoever saying like, you know, even when you're sick, like you need to show up. You need to get out of your apartment. You need to go to your appointments. You need to track. You need to be going. And then
missionaries were out tracting in the pandemic way longer than they should have been.
Oh my God. Yeah. But then it just comes back to this, like, you know, if God is your like loving heavenly father, then like, why is he allowing you to like, not only like pay financially to go on a mission, but to sacrifice your time to go on a mission. And while you're doing that, he's like,
you physically also need to sacrifice harming your health. You.
Yeah, physically harming you for being on a mission. Mm-hmm. And expecting yep. you to push yourself to like exhaustion to the point where you will wake up one day and be afraid of dogs when you've never been afraid of dogs before because your brain has nowhere else to place the anxiety that you feel about not being mm-hmm. a good enough missionary. Because that's exactly what yep. happened to me, is I was so anxious that I wasn't doing enough, that I wasn't enough, that I didn't know enough, that I wasn't worthy enough, that like my, but I refused to acknowledge that like the, that what I was being taught and what I was teaching wasn't true, or that it was damaging me or harming mm-hmm. other people, that like my brain took that anxiety and it made me afraid of random shit. And it, I'm still working through different aspects of those, like essentially like phobias.
Yep.
And if that's not behavior control, then like, I don't know how much more culty can you get than being a missionary, like let alone being a Mormon, but being a fucking Mormon missionary, like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I actually had a memory come up in my head today when I was doing some preparation. And I remember being in a zone conference and my mission president's wife was talking about rituals. And she's like, so what are ways like as a mission that we've developed our own rituals? And I immediately was like, the fact that we get here and we recite
the standard of truth.
The standard of truth.
That I probably still have memorized.
And she's like, well, yeah, but like, that's not what I mean. And I had this moment in my head of like, then what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Because
you can't get more ritualistic than group you can't chanting.
Yeah.
And also anyway, every mission president's wife is like such a Karen.
My mission president's wife sincerely is one of the sweetest people on the planet. I think she's not a Karen.
My first mission president's wife was like kind of a quiet Karen. And then my second mission president's wife, I think her name is actually Karen. But she's such a Karen. And my, oh my God, I just had another train memory hit my brain of when I was in the MTC and the MTC president's wife, because I went to the Mexico MTC, so like I knew the MTC president and I probably talked to him like every day. Like he would have he would come to like breakfast or lunch with missionaries. He would like pop into like classes randomly, like, and I knew him, and like he knew every missionary there like by name. And his wife would come every now and then to do like checks of our like our casa. Do they do that in Provo where they like make sure your space is like clean? And
oh yes.
So they came.
I have a mission president's wife story in the MTC.
Oh, that's right. I think I've heard that one. But this was, we were having like a little prank war with another room that was in our house, and we were for some reason passing back this like little carton of like orange juice and like hiding it in different places. I don't know. It was fun. So
it was fun.
The other room of these hermanas had made a little like chair out of tampons, clean tampons, unused tampons. And they made like a little chair, and then they like put the orange juice in this like little tampon chair. And then somehow at some point the tampon chair wound up being like taped to the ceiling with duct tape. So it was like the orange juice was swinging in a tampon chair from the ceiling. And I know that's a crazy sentence, but just like take a minute and picture it. And then
just take a minute and picture it.
Like really put yourself there. You're in a foreign country. You only have like 6 friends.
They can't.
They walk in.
You only have like 6 friends. More than you and I have combined right now.
You walk into your room and you're like, oh my God. Sorry. Oh my heck. They have built a tampon chair out of duct tape, and they put the orange juice in it, taped to it, and so like, it's the funniest thing you've ever seen in your goddamn life. In your gosh darn life. And then the MTC's president's wife comes in with like literally a clipboard to like check your living space. And this is just like above her head.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh no, 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 no.
I'll have
no.
to see. I probably have a picture of this like little orange juice container, because it was a staple of my like MTC time. And I was there for 6 weeks, so you like really get that's a long time. I can't imagine people who have to go for like 8 weeks or 12 weeks or anyway, she walks in and she's like talking to us, and we have just like smiles on our faces, and she's asking us how our day is, and she's like walking around and looking at like the corners of our beds to see if they're like tucked in, and she looks in our bathroom, and she's like looking around, and she like goes into the bathroom, and we just all are like frantically making eye contact silently and looking up at the orange juice that's taped to the tampon swing that's taped to the ceiling, and then looking at each other. And she just comes back out of the bathroom, and I'm like, for sure she's gonna see it, like she's coming at it the other angle now. And she just is like, well, here's some things you need to fix, but otherwise it looks really good. And then
she didn't fucking see it,
or if she did, she made a very conscious decision to just like let it go.
Fuck, that's really fucking funny.
The things that happen on missions are so insane, because again, they try to control your behavior so much, but at the same time, like, you're a person and you're with other people, and you naturally have an instinct to like have fun and to form relationships and to have emotions, and so it comes out in weird ways. I feel like maybe you should tell your MTC's mission present story, and then maybe we can end there.
So.
Your cats are upset. I can hear them. They're like, this is going to be awkward.
They are. So in the Provo MTC, I don't know if it's like this anymore, but when I was there, we had little like key cards, and if you forgot to take it with you to the shower, you would be locked out of your room. So we are in for the night. My companion goes to take a shower, and she and I, one of us would end up forgetting the key. So she leaves. She goes. A couple minutes later, I hear a knock on the door. And again, I'm getting ready for bed. In the last episode, we talked about how normal it is to just be in your garments. Mm-hmm. It's hot. And I assume that the knock at the door is my companion coming to snag her key. At this point, she's seen me in all my glory anyway, because welcome to being on a mission. So I just open the door, and I like didn't open it all the way. It was just like I kind of like stood behind it and like pulled it open so they, whoever was on the other end, could just like step in, assuming it was my companion. Nope. It was the mission president's wife, and she took the invite happily, walked right in, and her back is facing like where all of my clothes were, and my robe was like hanging like on the little like door behind her, and I could like see it, but I'm just like I'm just like standing
yeah, you like have to do, fold your arms over your
garments are boobs. See-through, and so my nips are just like hello. And she spent a good 5 minutes talking to me that way. didn't even care. And I kept trying to like dance around her without like letting go of my boobs, trying to like it. She wouldn't even, she kept like moving. And I'm like, are you, what's happening? It was mortifying, terrifying. And to this day, I still feel like, oh my God.
The fact that she didn't even give you.
This is someone I don't know. And like, I never saw her again. Like, give me my fucking privacy.
The fact that she didn't even give
you. She just wanted to come in and chat.
1 second of like the courtesy to be like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you'll, you know, put something on. Like,
no. Nope.
Just was ready to go. No. Nope. I think shows really clearly what we talked about last time, that double standard that, like, heaven forbid you see your. The edge of your garments under your skirt or on your shoulder when you're out and about, but then it's like fully fine for whatever fucking hypocritical reason to just like see people's, like people of the same gender's garments, like in all their glory. Like, it's just weird.
Yep. Because as a member, like if I were in my garments, I would describe that as naked. Because that's as naked as you're allowed to get unless you're going to go swimming or take a shower.
Well, yeah, and it's...
And so to me, I felt very exposed and very uncomfortable.
If you... Like, if garments didn't exist and she came to your door and you were wearing, like, panties and a bra, it would have been insane for her to just...
For her to stand there and talk to
you
to
and not allow you the moment
and
to, like,
clearly, I was uncomfortable. Like, I'm covering myself. I'm, like, trying to reach... And, like, the way the room was designed, like, everything behind her was a closet. So it wasn't like I was trying to grab something else. Like, it shouldn't have been a guess as to what I was trying to do when I'm, like, trying to, like, move around her. And, like, anyway, it was awful.
What did she even come and to talk to you about?
She just wanted to see how her day was.
Oh, God, I hate that.
I hate that, too. Anyway, so I swear, if you guys are still listening, we love you and appreciate you so much, because we just go on these crazy ass tangents, and for whatever reason, you guys are entertained. So we're going to leave it here for now. We're going to pick this up next time. Take a look at the links below. I will drop some information to the Bite model so you can... prepare yourself for next time. Have a better idea of what we're going to talk about. Make sure you give this video a big thumbs up. Hit that subscription box. Hit that notification bell. That way you don't miss our next video. If you are a audio listener, make sure you follow us on Spotify, Google Play. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We love the clout.
Mm-hmm. I mean... Or a 4-star review, or whatever you think we would deserve.
Or 4-star. Yeah, we're not going to be the church and, like, you know, dictate your behavior or whatever, but we would appreciate it if you are enjoying the content.
To leave us a review. Anyway. Yeah. We love you guys, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have to end the recording.
Oh, shit. Son of a bitch. You're right. I do.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?